All right, we have begun looking at the temptations of Jesus, and we looked at the first temptation in last week's lesson. We're going to be looking at the second temptation, and it's kind of hard to know what the second temptation is and what the third temptation is because the two of the accounts are reversed. Matthew's account has them in a different order than Luke's account does, the second and the third temptations. And some people say that, well, this is a Bible discrepancy and proves that the Bible has mistakes. Kind of like we were talking about in class earlier, that it said something a little bit different from Acts to the way it's said later on in the book of Acts, from Acts chapter 9 to Acts chapter 22. But we understand that there's no discrepancies in the Scriptures, that the Scriptures are truth, they come from the Spirit, they are perfect. And so just because the writers did not necessarily keep them in chronological order doesn't mean that they're any less correct, because we know that these temptations did happen to Jesus. And we know that the gospel writers didn't always go in chronological order with everything. There were some mixing around for different reasons. So we need to understand that in regard to these temptations. But we're going to be looking at Luke's account and looking at the second temptation according to Luke's account in Luke chapter 4, verses 5 through 8. After he tempted him about changing the stones into bread, in verse 5, he says, "Then the devil, taking him up on a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said to him, 'All this authority I will give you, and their glory, for this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. Therefore, if you will worship before me, all will be yours.' And Jesus answered and said to him, 'Get behind me, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve.'" Now, when we look at this temptation of Jesus, we know that Jesus is the king. But this would have made it a lot easier for him to be the king. He became the Messiah and the king through his crucifixion on the cross. And he died and he was raised from the dead and ascended into heaven. But if he would have just received these kingdoms from the devil, he could have had all this power without having to go to the cross. So you can see how this would be a temptation for him. And so Satan offers him that. "Everything that you see, I will give to you." Well, now when you think about everything that he could see here, you think about he would have been looking at Jerusalem. He would have been looking at all the powerful Roman cities. He would have seen all of this that he could have just had without having to go to the cross. And, you know, the Jewish power was there. The legion of soldiers he would have been in charge of were very visible. He would have seen all of this, and he could have had all of that very simply if he would have bowed down to Satan, according to Satan. And yet, we know that Jesus was not going to get the kingdom in that easy of a manner. And in fact, you know, when you think about Satan offering that, some people question as to whether or not Satan actually could have fulfilled that promise, could have actually given him all those kingdoms that he saw. But nevertheless, he did offer it to them. Now, we know Satan does rule this world. We know he's referred to, for example, in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4, he's referred to as the god of this age. And he's referred to in Ephesians 2 and verse 2 as the prince of the power of the air. So we know that he had power over the earth. And we know that he has many loyal followers, those who would bow down to him, those who follow him. But when Satan showed Jesus all of these kingdoms, he said, "I will give it all to you if you simply fall down and worship me." He offered that to Jesus. Well, let's now, as we look at this temptation, let's do it in this way. Let's see, first of all, how Satan tempted Jesus when he offered him the kingdoms. And then we're going to look at the modern man and how we try to justify sin. Because you know, when you think about Jesus being offered this, think about where Jesus was. Jesus was on a mountain, and he was with Satan, and there was nobody else there. And so here he is offered this, where no one else can know how he received it. What a temptation it is for Jesus. And let's look at it today. Let's look at, first of all, the fact that Jesus could have very well said, well, if I bow down to Satan now, that it's not going to hurt anybody. It's not going to hurt anybody if I bow down to Satan. The idea is that sinful practices can be acceptable if there's no harm in them. That's what some people think. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody. Now, many people have this idea when they look at sexual relations before marriage. Well, it's not going to hurt anybody if I have sexual relations before marriage. Here's an example. In a psychology class, and this is just an example, one young lady said to the teacher, "Don't you agree that we, as part of this generation that has finally been relieved of the consequences of premarital sexual relations, the fact that we can avoid disease, and if a person doesn't want to have a baby, that too can be avoided, that it should be perfectly acceptable. And in fact, today's society is that even if you get pregnant, you can take care of that too. You can have an abortion and there you don't have any consequences at all. So it's not going to hurt anybody if we do this." That's what people's attitude might be toward that. People have the attitude toward social drinking in the same manner. Well, if I go back in my back room and I drink, what harm's it going to do to anybody? Now, I take care of my family. I do what I need to do. I don't take away from anybody else. I don't get out on the highway and drive and drink. I just simply do it in my back room. I don't jeopardize anybody's life. It doesn't hurt anybody. That's the attitude that some might have. It doesn't hurt anyone. You know, if Jesus would have bowed down to Satan, it wouldn't have hurt it wouldn't have hurt anybody. Nobody would have been affected by him bowing down to Satan. And so Jesus could have made that excuse. Well, hey, I can avoid the cross. I can get all of these earthly kingdoms, and I can be ruler over this, and I don't have to worry about the other. He could have had that attitude because it wasn't going to hurt anybody, he could have said. Well, the second thing he could have done, he could have said, other people are doing it. It's not just me. If I bow down to Satan, I'm not the only one who is bowing down to Satan. People today try to judge what is moral and what is immoral on the basis of what society today accepts as a whole. What should I do? What should I not do? Well, what does society say? Many rationalize that their sin is no worse than anyone else's. Now, this is the attitude of young people. Well, all my friends are doing it. Why can't I do it? It doesn't matter what it is or whether it's wrong or not. Why can't I do it if everyone else is doing it? Remember the Israelites, they had that problem when they wanted a king. Remember, they looked around and saw all these heathen nations all around them that had kings. They said, well, we want a king. God said, I'm your king. Said, no, we want a king. And remember what happened when they got a king. And they were warned by the prophet what all would happen. And yet they did succumb to sin as the king led them in the way of the foreign nations and following after idols. So just because everyone else is doing it or everyone else has it doesn't mean that we should. So people today are working diligently at trying to make things acceptable in our society just because other people accept it. So everybody is doing it. There's other people who are doing it. So why can't you accept it? Like homosexuality. Homosexuality is getting to be accepted today. Why don't you accept it? Why don't you become a part of it? Why don't you allow homosexuals to be your preachers and to be your elders? Why don't you accept that lifestyle? Everyone else is, they say. No, it doesn't matter if anyone else is doing it or not. That's not the line that we draw. It's not whether or not someone else accepts it or is doing it. It's whether or not it is right according to God. How do we decide what is moral and what is immoral? It's not by saying what everyone else is bowing down to Satan. Everyone else is serving him. That's not what Jesus did either. Jesus didn't make that excuse. It's not a legitimate excuse. Just because others are bowing down to him, just because they're doing his will and not God's will, Jesus would not bow down to Satan. Well, the third thing that we learn from this temptation that Jesus could have done, again, as he was on the mountain and he was away from everyone else and he was there with Satan and they're having this conversation, he could have said, "No one will know. Nobody will know." Can we justify sin by saying that no one will know? Now, when you think about the way this world works, if people want to commit sin or they want to do things that are wrong, if they want to do something that is against the law, when are they going to do that? Look with me in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. We're going to look at verses 4 through 8 in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, beginning in verse 4. It says, "But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet the hope of salvation." When we think about when people do wrong, when people sin, when people break the law, they do it in the cover of darkness. If a thief wants to break in, they're going to do so at night when nobody can see them, most instances. They're going to do so in such a way that they're going to make sure nobody sees. You know, in our day and age with cameras, it's very easy, much easier for people to be caught because the camera catches them. So they're going to do what they can to avoid the camera. They're going to do what they can to avoid the light where people will see. That's how people work. Evil men work in darkness. Evildoers hate the light. And this is stated in John chapter 3. John chapter 3, verses 18 through 21, after talking about Jesus and how if you believe in him, you can be saved. John chapter 3 and verse 18. John chapter 3 and verse 18. It says, "He who believes in him is not condemned, but he who does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil." The light came, but they didn't want the light. They loved the darkness. Why? Because their deeds were evil. Verse 20, "For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen that they have been done in God." If your deeds are done in God, you want them to be clearly seen. You want them to be revealed so God and everyone else can see that. But if you are doing evil, you want that to be hidden. We understand that. We know the concept of a dark alley where danger lurks. We don't want any part of that. We want to be in the light. And so evildoers hate the light. Those who are godly want to be in the light. But once sin is committed, people will try to cover up their sin, or they'll try to hide their sin. You know what the result of that is? If you say, "Well, no one will know," and then if someone starts to know, you start trying to cover it up, know what that leads to? That'll lead to a lie, because you'll have to deceive someone. And then that'll lead to another lie, because you're going to get your stuff stuck. Because once you say something, or you say you didn't do something, then that's going to lead you to have to defend something else, and you're going to have to do something else, and you're going to have to keep telling lies to keep caught up with it. And you know, the thing to do is just not to lie in the first place. Don't try to cover it up. And that's why we must admit when we sin. You know, a prime example of that is King David. What did King David do? When King David committed sin with Bathsheba, committed adultery with Bathsheba, well, that was a sin. What he should have done is he should have admitted it, changed, repented of it, turned to God. But instead, what did he do? He tried to cover it up. He killed her husband, sent him out in the battlefield so that he would be on the front line and he would be killed. That's the wrong attitude. The idea that I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure no one knows about it, whether it's lying, whether it's stealing, whether it's killing even, that's the wrong attitude. No one will know is certainly not a godly attitude, covering up sin. Look with me in Proverbs chapter 28. Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 13. And there's a couple other Proverbs we'll be looking at when we're there. Proverbs 28 and verse 13 says, "He who covers his sins will not prosper." And we know that, don't we? We know that if we keep covering up sin, it's just going to lead to more sin. It's going to get ourselves in trouble. We're going to be in trouble with everyone by the time we get done. We may even be in trouble with the law by the time we get done if we keep trying to cover sin and keep lying about it. He who covers sin will not prosper. You know, Jesus could have said, no one's ever going to know. I'm in this mountain, no one's going to know. But when someone has that attitude, no one will know, man forgets about God. Forgets that God is the way and God is the truth. Proverbs 15 and verse 3 is another proverb, if you're still there. Proverbs 15 and verse 3 says, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good." When you start to do something that is wrong, you start to sin. And you say, well, nobody's going to know about it. What you need to do is you need to remember that there is someone who's going to know about it. Because God's watching. God's watching those who are doing good. God's watching those who are doing evil. God's looking around. He sees all. And we cannot escape the presence of God. Psalm 139, God's everywhere. God's in the bottom of the sea. God's in the heaven. God's everywhere. And we understand that we cannot escape His presence. And you know, besides that, besides the fact that we can say, well, nobody else is going to know, except for God. And if we admit that God will know. You know who else will know? It's not just God who will know. I'll know. If I sin against God, God knows, and then I know also. And why do I want that weighing on me? Why do I want that on my conscience? We shouldn't want to have to live and bear the burden of knowing that we've sinned and hiding it from everybody else. We should want to come clean with that, have a good, strong conscience, be willing to condemn ourselves even if no one else knows. Well, after we see this excuse that no one will know, Jesus could have made another excuse. Jesus could have said, just one time. Because Satan didn't ask him, you bow down to me today, and you bow down to me tomorrow, and you bow down to me every day for the rest of your life. He said, bow down to me one time. One time. People know it's sin, but will do it if it's only once. Or so they say. They say, I'll do it one time, and it's not going to hurt anything if I just do it one time. And some may say, well, I'm going to commit this sin one time, and then I'll pray to God, and I'll ask Him to forgive me of this sin, and then I'll be good, and I won't do it ever again. One time. Satan uses that, doesn't he? Satan wants to try to trap you with that, because one time, hardly ever, if ever, just stays one time. How many people have said, I'm just going to have one drink? Then once they have that drink, they have that taste, and they want it again, and then they want it again, and they want it again. And they have that one temptation. And after that, they say, well, that's it. And they go, no, I really want that. So they do it the next day. Then they know it. And then they're hooked. then they're addicted. That's what happens. That's how people get addicted to substances. People say, I'm just going to take this drug one time. And then they're hooked. They can't get off of it. We have to be aware of that tactic that Satan has against us. Because after one sins, just that one time, then they will try to justify it. Say, well, it was just once, it's not that big of a deal. What's it going to, you can go back to what's it going to hurt? Who's it going to hurt? What's the big deal about one time? I'm not like others who do it all the time. I'm not like him who I see there every single night doing this terrible sin. I only did it once. Is God going to use that, accept that as an excuse, saying, well, you're not guilty because you only did it once? Jesus could have easily succumbed to that, though. Jesus could have said, I'm just going to bow down once. Nobody's going to know. That's going to be the end of it. And then I'm going to have all these kingdoms. He didn't do that. Because he knew just one time was too many times. And then finally, the last thing that we learn from this temptation is that he could have said, well, it's going to do some good. Because man believes that if something does good, that it can't be sin. As long as it does good, it can't be sin. Joseph Fletcher, in the book Situation Ethics, The New Morality, he tells of a woman in a Nazi labor camp. And he said the German soldiers made a rule that if a woman got pregnant, that she could go home. And so the woman seduced a German guard, got pregnant, was sent home, and then everyone in the family was happy. And he mentions many similar hypothetical situations, all of which are designed to excuse sin. Now that's a big example, a very powerful example of that. But the idea is, are we going to try to excuse it by saying, well, it's going to do some good? Well, Fletcher, the one who wrote this book, believed that this did not excuse her sin, and that idea does not excuse sin. This is what we have to understand. It's always right to do right and always wrong to do wrong. And that's a hard lesson sometimes. Because sometimes we may want to take the easy way out. Or we want to make it the best situation for us. But always remember, it's always right to do right and always wrong to do wrong. And also remember this. Two wrongs don't make a right. You do two things that are wrong and say, well, this and this, you put it together and that will be okay. No, two wrongs don't make a right. 100 wrongs don't make a right. We have to understand what sin is and avoid that. And then finally, if you choose the lesser of two evils, what is it? Still evil. You have two things, they're both wrong. Say, well, this isn't as wrong as this is. So I'm going to do this and not this. It's still wrong. And our human minds don't always wrap around that. We don't always get that concept. But that's what we have to understand about sin. Jesus could have done that. Jesus said it could do some good. But he reasoned that he should not give in to Satan. And he did not give in to Satan. You know, what did he say? We'll go back to our text in Luke chapter 4 and notice how Jesus responded to this, because this is really the conclusion. This is what we have to understand about everything we just talked about in verse 8. And Jesus answered and said to him, "Get behind me, Satan. Listen, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve." I'm not going to serve you, devil, for one time. I'm not going to serve you, devil, because nobody else knows. I'm not going to serve you, devil, because it's not going to hurt anybody. I'm not going to serve you, devil, because it might do some good. I'm going to only serve God. That's what Jesus said. That's the example we have and how we need to live our lives. Jesus could have reasoned, if I rule over all these kingdoms, it'll be easier to get disciples. He could have said, if I can't come and I actually have all of this physical kingdoms, then people are going to want to be a part of it. But he knew that no matter what good might come from it, it was still wrong to give in to Satan, and he did not do it. He said, "Get behind me, Satan." I hope all of us have that attitude, that when sin, when we're presented with sin, we'll say, "Get behind me, Satan." We'll move forward, we'll press on, we'll live our lives for him and him alone. Hope that all of us are doing that. If you haven't yet become a child of God, we want you to become a child of God. We want you to obey him. We don't want you to serve Satan anymore. We don't want you to be a slave of Satan. We want you to be a follower of Christ. We want you to make the decision to follow Christ today. Repent of your sins. Change your mind about sin. Determine you're not going to sin anymore. Confess Christ. Say that I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And then be baptized in water for the remission of your sins. Won't you do that today? Won't you become a Christian? Won't you just say, "Get behind me, Satan. I'm going to serve the Lord." I hope that all of us are doing that. If you need to respond to the gospel, if you need to repent as a Christian and turn back to the Lord, do that. Ask the Lord to forgive you. If you need us to pray with you, we will certainly do that also. But we invite you to come now while we stand and while we sing.